Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Back to Waypoint Sports and Sports Adjacent. Do I have to do this? Do I have to do the? I have to do the intro.
You have to finish strong.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Waypoint Sports and Sports Adjacent podcast. It sets out to disprove the notion that people with lives dedicated to pixels jumping across the screen can't also be unhealthily interested in what nerds condescendingly refer to as sports ball every Super Bowl. Rob, well, I'm going to start off this episode, at least this last episode, with a final question. Are the Bears back?
You know, you'll have to tell me, because some stuff happened around the time of the draft.
Technically, Rob, if you want to take the question at face value, OTAs are occurring at the moment, which is sort of like a training, like a mild training session.
They
are literally back before they go on vacation. Before actual training camp starts in, I believe, late July. So, you know, having to answer the existential question of, are they back? I don't know. Will DJ Moore, like, unlock Justin Fields? Will these offensive line
improvements? They're probably more back than Aaron Rodgers.
That's true. He does have that. Watching, I guess, Alan Lazard, the wide receiver they signed, the ex-Packer, came back on the field, and it's normal during OTAs and like early training camp for folks to have like conditioning issues. But boy, it was kind of delightful to watch the couple of Jets fans in my life like have it, because like everyone's gonna get fired if this season goes awry. Like this season is a not just make the playoffs, but like probably win a playoff game or bust for the Jets organization before everyone is swept out to try and find a brand new quarterback all over again. You know, we've discussed. I have mixed feelings. I want Jets fans to be happy, but they've been saddled with an arch nemesis of mine, and so I cannot with cleanly just root for the Jets to be good.
No, I want it to go in the most like classically Jets way possible, which is really nothing about Jets fans at this point. This is just Packer hate.
Yes. I've already seen the storylines coming out of these OTAs, these early training practices are always weird. You know, I already saw the ones coming from like Packers OTAs are like, look, are we where we want to be yet? No. Is Jordan Love any good? Who can say? Do you want to go like 3 for 11 on a 7-on-7 drill, which usually favors the offense? Like, you don't. It's not what you want to see. But, you know, it's early. Like, you know, who could say? Did you see how they structured his contract?
No.
So Jordan Love, for people who aren't familiar, is essentially a quarterback who was drafted by the Green Bay Packers, I believe, 4 years ago. With the idea being that Aaron Rodgers was potentially like having a fairly normal expected decline in performance that happens for these kind of like high level athletes at like their mid to late 30s. That pissed Aaron Rodgers off. It was at the same time they had gotten rid of Mike McCarthy and their new coach, LaFleur. It was unclear what, you know, how good he was going to be. And then Aaron Rodgers goes on to have back to back incredible like MVP scenes where he is both good and he's in a system that is excellent, and that, you know, produced some, he didn't produce Super Bowls, mostly produced back-to-back ass kickings by the 49ers in the playoffs, but they were a good team. And so this Jordan Love just sits on the bench. This is not like, you know, and this is what Aaron Rodgers did do, right? Like he was on the bench, I think, for 3 or 4 seasons before Brett Favre did the exact same thing, including going to the fucking Jets that Aaron Rodgers is doing now. But basically, like at this stage of a rookie contract arc, that you want to make a decision, what's called the fifth year option. That is a team, a contract option that keeps the player cost controlled for another year. It's expensive. It's more expensive than the first 4 years of the contract, but it essentially gives you another option before, even for mid-level quarterbacks, you're paying 30-something million. Go look at the Daniel Jones contract with the Giants, right? Like, he's not a great quarterback, but if they are competent and good, the market value on them is pretty high. But there's, like, no evidence that Jordan Love is any good. There's also really no evidence that he's bad. And so the Packers were not really in a position where they wanted to pick up his fifth-year option. Jordan Love was not really in a position to be like, well, I'll just walk away and, you know, I'm just going to earn a bunch of money from someone else, because there's no body of work to look at. So he ends up signing, like, this two-year deal that is, like, has upside for him that can match the fifth-year player option. But if he's bad, cost controls Jordan Love for 2 years, where it doesn't really impact the team all that much as they transition out of, like, the Aaron Rodgers contract, which I think is going to be on their books for at least, like, this season and next to some degree. It's a bizarre situation.
Yeah, the Jordan Love situation has always been a weird one, because it was like one of those things where the Packers felt like they were backed into needing to draft someone like this, just in case the twofold things of, like, Rodgers appeared to be declining a little bit. And then there was the Aaron Rodgers of it all. So there were two reasons to kind of have at least something in your back pocket.
It's good, but team also, building. Like, it's like, I can't argue with the, I mean, it's.
You, for you sure, be, but it was also the thing that ignited the next 4 years of drama, where it was like this, Aaron's not happy that they thought about ever having another quarterback. And then, you know, because of the weirdness around it, there was always this really fraught, like, well, what have we got here? To be fair, like, I don't think we saw much of Aaron Rodgers while Favre was there. That was another, like, long cooling your heels period. But it doesn't seem like there's the same confidence. Like, we have seen him a bit in some games. And there just hasn't been, as you said, a lot of evidence one way or the other. But I think you're always hoping that you would get some sign that there's something explosive. There's explosive potential. And it hasn't been seen, as far as we can tell, in practice or in those few game appearances.
Yeah, he was okay against the Chiefs game, where I think Rodgers was out with COVID last was that last season, the season before? Something like that. I mean, on the Bears front, I mean, the few things that we can kind of grasp onto at this point that we can say about the team before things like training camp arrives and rosters are finalized and you're approaching preseason games is that like we've had, like, the general manager Ryan Poles has, I think, been doing some interesting expectation setting. He was pretty clear, like, for a general manager, maybe because he's young or maybe it's a different style, is pretty straightforward about this is what I like and this is what I want, as opposed to a lot of the kind of executive or coach doublespeak that you frequently get out of football in particular. And last year was a lot of, you know, trying to figure out what kind of team we are, trying to establish a culture. And that is just, that's about as close as you're going to get to. We expect to be bad and we're going to be bad, but I can't say that because it would be demoralizing to the team. Whereas this year, like, he's been doing interviews where, like, we expect to be pretty good. We expect to be competing for meaningful games in December. And then I saw this stat that was really interesting. And this is something I thought about a lot on the Bears' path to having the number one overall pick. When they were not, I don't think they were the worst team in football. I think they were a bad team. But getting to the number one pick is a combination of being bad and extraordinarily luck, as what happened with the Bears, where the Texans 4th-and-20'd themselves into winning a game.
That's not luck. That's Bears culture.
That is Bears.
That's love.
Well, frankly, I mean, when you've turned that sort of stuff into Bears culture, we don't call it luck. We call it Bears culture. And I saw this stat, I believe this number is correct, in which the Bears were in the same way that the Vikings, for example, were in, I don't know what the actual number was, but let's just say 8, because I think the number for the Bears is 8. The Vikings were, for the sake of argument, in 8 games that were decided by one score, and they basically won all of them. Like, there is a reason that team got their asses kicked by the Giants of all teams in the playoffs, because they were not a bad team, but their record was kind of fraudulent and they won the equivalent of coin tosses over and over. It just, like, kept coming up heads as they were predicting heads. The Bears were in 8 one-score games and basically lost all of them. I think they won one. And that's like measured by like being a one score game at some point in the fourth quarter or going into the fourth quarter. So that's a competitive team that got a combination of bad luck. And how many times, Rob, if you like think back to I think back to the Commanders game, I think it's the Dolphins games, the Commanders game especially, where they were at they're literally like at the end of the field and like Justin Fields threw the ball like three times. And like, I believe Darnell Mooney had a catch that he just dropped. There was another one at the Dolphins game where Justin Fields was converting a fourth down through just a money shot. I don't know if it was Chase Claypool. I don't know who was catching it. We had a lot of no name catchers and he dropped it. And there were so many moments where you lost a game and went, yay, Justin Fields looked good. And yay, they lost for the draft pick. But also we lost. And so the team is just not – team is like spent money, has conceivably good draft picks, and more experience with Justin Fields and like, you know, the trade picks like with a DJ Moore. And then if you just accept like normal statistical like regression to the mean, if they win four out of those like eight plus being a slightly better team, like they're going to win a lot more than three games. I guess what we could do – should we just run down the schedule?
Oh.
Because I think it's out, right?
Oh, shit.
Don't look at the document. Yes. The document has nothing on it.
I realized. No, it's not real.
It's from the last one.
That's last show.
Chicago Bears, I believe. Yeah, because they did the whole schedule nonsense.
Oh, no, Pat. See, this is immediately where I, like, Patrick, I am, like, my head is, like, the Bears are still not going to be a good football team this season, but right away, I'm, like, but what do you think the season is going to be?
All right, so we'll do these, I'm pacing these in. Week one, so this is the first 5 weeks of the season. The Green Bay Packers, they are playing at Soldier Field, at home. Against the Green Bay Packers. I don't like this, like from a vibes perspective.
Oh, it's a national game,
too. They have a bunch of 325 games, which is the NFL saying, well, maybe you're going to be good. We're not going to give you a whole lot of although they have a handful of actual national night games throughout the season. But I just don't like. Let's say we fast forward and the team wins nine games. How many times in that scenario do you think it's also possible to be in the world where we lose that first week and just it's Packers fans rubbing it in our face? They're a rebuilding team. Like they lost Rodgers and they beat us with Jordan Love. Like that's very easy to conceive, but I'm going to give them the dub.
It's not going
to
happen. Bears
no,
win.
I'm giving the dub. I'm giving the dub. Yes, exactly. Because the vibes are good. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, week two.
The Bucs?
Baker Mayfield?
They're done.
Yeah. That's a W.
Bears win.
Kansas City Chiefs, that's an L. that's an L. Playing at Arrowhead.
That is an L. But week four, talk about what the hell do you expect from a team?
They play the Denver Broncos. They are playing at Soldier Field, a Sunday noon game. So the schedule makers also don't really know what to expect. I'm going to get the numbers on here a little incorrect, but that going into last season, the Broncos were something for betting odds in the top five of most likely to make. At least make the Super Bowl or win the Super Bowl, like one of those metrics. And they were one of the worst teams in football. Got a one and done coach. Russell Wilson did not look done, but looked as though this is a profound. I think he can still be pretty good if he is able to put his ego aside or get pushed around into playing a style of play. And I do think they've picked a coach that
is going to
tell him, look, if you want to be here next season, because I'm going to be here next season, then, you know, like Sean Payton is going to be there for 5 years. Russell Wilson might be gone.
This is not a fix-it deal.
Correct. Yeah, I can 100% believe a world where Russell Wilson is bad again, is fighting with his coach, and he is gone, and he's made his tens of millions, but he is essentially either has to suck it up and become a backup. Become a Baker Mayfield, like who's the quarterback for the Bucs this year. So I don't know to expect of that team, they've already done the Sean Payton Saints thing, which is like picks. You know what I mean? Like, they gave a bunch away for Russell Wilson, and instead of, like, stockpiling, be conservative, think about what the team's going to be in 2 years, they're trading up, they're trading away. I mean, they're doing what Sean Payton does, which is the team's going to be what he wants the team to be as fast as he wants it to be, and that's just – at least it makes them interesting. But I don't know –
It does, but I don't think it makes them winners.
I don't. I think it makes us winners.
Exactly. I think the Bears win, but I will say I think Russell's done, and that sucks. I don't bear the guy ill will. His deep ball, I would like him to get more seasons.
When he was good, was some of the most fun to watch because he threw those moonshots, right? Like, yes. He would whip the ball, and it's, you don't see this all the time in football, but the camera just has to watch this ball go up and up, and it's just up there, and you don't know what's going to happen on the other side. And more times than not, you know, a Tyler Lockett or whoever would catch those, and they were tremendous. But the problem is he doesn't even have
compelling short passes at this point. Like, no. His arm looks so weak, and it's like, you know, with Brady, not the very tail end of Brady, but like even the final seasons when the arm was a shadow of itself, he still had the capacity to deliver those like on time short passes. And the crucial part there is they have to be on time. You know, like if the read is right and the pass is short, you still have to get it out fast, and it has to have a little bit of zip on it. Like, not even a lot, but some. And man, there were so many games where Wilson's arm looked like it was just incapable of throwing a ball at like NFL velocities. I like, that's my concern. But could be a great day for the Bears defense.
I agree. Okay. All right. So we're saying dub. We're saying even though Sean Payton is a good coach, an excellent coach, probably one of the best coaches.
I don't think he's treating next season as his turn the ship around season.
I agree. All right. The Commanders, who at this point, they are in the midst of a sale. They do not. Sam Howell is their quarterback, with who they're saying their quarterback, or it's Jacoby Brissett, who is solid. When he doesn't get injured or attacked by doctors. Isn't he the one that got the needle in his lung when he was on the Chargers?
I swear to God, are you sure that wasn't another installment of Geno Smith's unfathomable luck?
You might be right. I mean, he's one of the these journeyman quarterbacks who
Tyrod.
Tyrod Taylor. Okay. Well, again, Jacoby Brissett, Tyrod Taylor, these are all like these kind of
cursed quarterbacks,
yeah. Who kind of just go play. When they're on your team, it means you've drafted somebody, and they're like, well, this guy's going to play until our guy is ready, which means like between 1 and 3 weeks before the guy is on the field. So they have an excellent defense. Chase Young was injured all of last year. He's extremely good. I think their defense is going to be great. I think their offense has a bunch of really good skill players. I would put this one as a toss-up. I think they're going to be a better team than expected. And so I'm inclined like to give some L's because we got to hand them out like in some places, right? And I'm certainly not going to do it to number six, the game after this, the Minnesota Vikings. Unless, how do you feel? Is this where we split? Are you saying dub?
I think it's a dub.
Okay, all right.
Bears culture, stronger than Washington's.
Well,
as far as I know, the Bears have never asked for any employees' passports before a big event.
Week 6 against the Minnesota Vikings. This will be at Soldier Field. I think the Vikings are due for a huge come down. I don't think they're going to be a bad team, but I think they're going to be a profoundly mediocre team. And they are clearly ready to move on from Kirk Cousins. And I'm just ready to get back into kicking that boy's ass. So that's a dub for me.
For me, this is an L.
Wow. Okay.
I think they are primed for a come down, but I actually suspect they don't. My suspicion is they're still decent. They're better than you think they're going to be, and they're just like average.
Well, I mean, Justin Jefferson is just tremendous.
And the thing is, like, Cousins showed that, like, in key moments, he's not going to be that guy. Sure, but he's still productive. So I think the Vikings could still be the sort of team to humble a rising Bears team.
An ascending Bears team. All right, the week 7, Las Vegas Raiders. This is played at Soldier Field. We got a string of Soldier Field games. We had the Vikings from Soldier Field.
They're broken and broke. Like, they literally, like, the word is they don't have enough cash on hand to make the changes they need to fix the organization. They can't deal with the coaching situation. It all starts with the ruinous contract they gave to Gruden. And then they gave McDaniel a, like, good contract. And
he seems like he can be done if they have a bad season.
I think I've seen some coverage that he would be done
if they can afford to have him be done.
They can't eat the contract
because they're still paying parts of the Gruden stuff. Yeah.
Well, it's a family business. They like the Raiders were in such a good position, but they spent so much money building what they thought would be like a dynasty out like on a foundation of sand that they screwed up their money.
So it's dumb.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Next week, going to SoFi Stadium, flying out to Los Angeles. This is right before Halloween, October 29th. A 7:20 game, Rob, which means this is Sunday night football.
When in your life has anything good happened with a Halloween night national game with the Bears of late? I feel like...
I don't know, Rob. October 24th, 2022, Bears 33, New England Patriots 14. That was the best game. That was like some of the most fun I've had watching football.
That was my favorite Bears game since Bears Rams, I want to say, like ages ago. Maybe Bears Cowboys, where we got shithoused at that bar. But... I feel like I've seen
It's an L. I'm
a Halloween weekend game with a national broadcast. Oof.
Yeah. I'm with you. And the Chargers are good. And this, like, they're in their Super Bowl window. Like, what you want out of games like the Chargers or the Chiefs, even when we're assigning the L's, is they were often competitive for about a half. And then somewhere in the third quarter, early fourth, they didn't have the juice, and Fields would get would start getting tired, and like couldn't pull off the runs, and like wasn't getting blocks for passes. So, like a loss that is 27-30, it's like that's like a win for the or even 20-30, right? Where like you're putting points on the board. And you feel
presupposes good about it. Like three touchdowns, which like a new world for the Bears.
Right. All right, week 9. We have the Bears at the New Orleans Saints going to New Orleans for this. This is a Sunday game at noon. The Saints were okay last year. Who is their quarterback? Is it Jameis Winston again?
No, did they go to Carr? Is this where Carr washed
that
up?
Where Derek Carr went. You're right. Derek Carr.
That would be nice.
I think he is not a bad quarterback by any means. He is above the Jimmy Garoppolo, like Andy Dalton, like middle of the pack, pure system, like kind of quarterback.
But I still think it feels like New Orleans is a situation where once again he will bear an undue share of blame for a thing that is like hopelessly flawed around him. Bears win.
I think this is a coin flip game, and in coin flip games, we're bearing down and we're saying a dub. Now this one is really good. This is a good set. This has some drama. Week 10, the first Thursday night game. So the Bears will be going from New Orleans, flying back to Chicago for a Thursday night game at Soldier Field against the Carolina Panthers. Famously, the team that the Bears traded with to go from number 1 to number 9. They have their new quarterback, Bryce Young, who is, if you know anything about him, he is extremely short. He is a really short quarterback. By week 10, he should be playing. They haven't said, obviously it's too early to say who's going to be the starters, but if you have the number 1 pick in the draft and you've drafted a quarterback, by week 10, no matter what's happening, like that kid is playing. And so it is gonna, you know, DJ Moore, who like their number one wide receiver, who is now the Bears' number one wide receiver, will be on the team. There's just a lot of fun storylines. And this is a good one, Rob. I think this was pointed out on the Hogan's John's podcast recently. You know, when you're thinking about the team building aspect of the Bears going beyond this year, you know, we own first round pick from the Panthers next year. And I believe it's the second round pick that year or the year after. I forget exactly how that works out. But this is a rare scenario where you want to win not just because you want the dub, but because it increases it, it sends their draft pick higher, which sends our draft pick higher. And so it's like a twofold win. It's like it's for team building and it's for, you know, Bears culture, which is good. So because of that, I have to give them the dub. Like, there's too much juice on that. You sticking with that? Are you giving the Panthers a shot? They have a good defense. Brian Burns, right? I think he's
yeah, and the thing is, like, I just don't know what to expect from the Bears defense either. Mm-hmm. So, like, I could see this being an episode where, like, whatever Bryce Young's flaws are, I could see his profile just, like, torching a Bears defense that isn't, like, really built out and doesn't, like, have a ton of talent.
It's like Kyler Murray, right? Like, that is the closest, like, physical comparison we have for Bryce Young. I think he's a better prospect than Kyler Murray. But, like, small – and frankly, Russell Wilson is, like, from the same sort of athletic build. Small, running around, making things happen. Okay. All right, Rob.
I think it's a Bears loss.
Okay. All right. Next week, week 11, the Bears are traveling to Detroit for a noon game against the Lions. They're going to be good this year. I think the division...
Because they got David Montgomery?
Yeah, but then they drafted a running back really high in the first round. I actually think on David Montgomery, I'm pretty pissed because... you were supposed to come in as maybe a featured back, and now you're.
The Bears tried to
keep him. But what I mean is, the way Poles has talked about that contract that they offered to Montgomery was that it was a competitive offer. And so you kind of got the sense, like, hey, fresh start, like, featured role, and then they go and draft, like, a high profile first round running back. But I root for David Montgomery. I root for his success.
Yeah, I'm
taking this as an outlier.
I think he'll get his touches. I don't think he needs to worry about that. But I think this is another Bears loss.
Yeah, I'm with you. So we're both in the loss category. I think the Bears are going to end up splitting with a lot of the division. Is like broadly how I feel about it. Mostly because I just don't know how things are. The Bears team is just such an unknown in terms of what their... I know what their floor is. I just don't know what their ceiling is. And then we'll get a better sense of that in the division. Week 12. Monday night football in Minnesota at US Bank Stadium against the Vikings. Saying that that's an L? Two. All yep. right, so Rob is saying two L's against the Vikings. I'm also going to say an L, but I gave them a win earlier.
I think like it'll be so like look to me the way this shakes out is it's going to be a short week against Carolina. Mm-hmm. They are set up to get like sort of stunned there. Mm-hmm. Lions, who knows what's going to happen? Week 12, it's a Monday night game. Panic will be setting in. They'll want to like make a statement on like a nationally carried game. They won't. Or they'll make the wrong kind of statement.
We go into the bye week in a panic, in a tizzy.
Yes. Yes.
Like, is Justin Fields the guy? Are we going for a quarterback next year? You're saying that's the conversation in Chicago. Wow, okay. Because, yeah, week 13, Bears are on a bye. Then they come back and immediately have to play the Lions again, this time in Soldier Field, Sunday noon game, December 10th.
Dub,
okay. All right. Rob was going with the dub. I'm going to give them a win as well because I think it's going to get split. Week 15, this is one of the several to-be-determined games. They have not said...
Trying to figure out if one or both of these teams is going to be real.
I think part of this is they have the new flex into Thursday right. option. So this could be flexed into Thursday, which is why it's not listed here. So they play the Browns in Cleveland. We don't know what time. Could be like a primetime Thursday game. I don't know what to make of the Browns. I don't know what to make of Deshaun Watson. I know what to make of Deshaun Watson, but you know what I mean.
But like what is left there is a football player. What kind of player?
He was bad last year, which was
and
good.
You kind of expect him to be, but you would have expected to see more of who he was when he was such a high value item before.
Right. What does it mean to be away from the game that long? Yeah. Like, what kind of mental state is this person in? I don't mean that in an empathetic sense. I just mean it more in like a practical sense. Like, what happens when a player basically doesn't touch the field for 2 years and is embroiled in everything that was going on around them and then is thrust with this enormous guaranteed contract? You know, gets the money regardless of what happens.
I mean, it's dub time.
Okay. All right. Rob's going with the W. I think I'm going to go with a loss. A lot of the analysts that I follow have said the Browns have had a really good offseason. But I think none of that will matter if Watson is a below average quarterback. So some of this is contingent on, what did they pay for? What are they actually getting? Week 16, a 3:25 game. So an afternoon game at Soldier Field against the Arizona Cardinals. This will be happening on Christmas Eve. And Rob, we're all going to get a gift of a dub against the Arizona Cardinals.
New Year's Eve. Right. Huh? Oh, no, you're at Christmas Eve. Oh, it's playing New Year's Eve and Christmas Eve. Yeah.
The team is bad. Kyler Murray is not going to, it's got to be horrible. All serious athletic injuries are horrible. You'd rather just see all players playing at the heights of their powers and just competing on that. But in football, especially to have an ACL tear deep into the season, because that is just a bare minimum year long process to come back from, especially when you're a player like him where he has to run and cut. He's not a pocket passer sort of. So it's like it may be that he is barely plays and is not very good even when he plays next year. And they are clearly a team looking towards the future. I think there's a very realistic scenario where Kyler Murray's not even on that team because there is a Andrew Luck, Caleb something, is the Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning, kind of how Trevor Lawrence was talked to. This is the prospect. This is the one you want if you can get him. And they're going to be in a position to because the Texans, the Cardinals own the Texans and their own number one pick next year. I've seen mock drafts where they actually have 1 and 2, and there is a Jamar Chase level wide receiver next year called Marvin Harrison Jr., I believe is their name. And so the Cardinals could be a completely different team. But in the meantime, we get that W. And then we head into week 17, also known as the Ryan Pace 2.0 team, because he just I think it was 2 seasons ago, where he just kept acquiring ex Chicago Bears players down there. I saw that just recently. Who was our GM before Ryan Pace? Do you remember during the Jay Cutler era? Jerry Angelo retire?
I thought he died. Somebody died recently ish.
No, it's not died. I believe Jerry Angelo went to do some consultant work on the Falcons. And he retired. I think that's right. Anyway, they are at Soldier Field Sunday at noon on New Year's Eve. So we get delightful Bears games on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, which is awesome. That's always fun. The Bears used to have that Thanksgiving game against the Lions.
Maybe you and I will go to one.
That's true. Ooh. So that's
sorry, family. I have to hang out with my work family at Soldier Field.
I need to come back pretty intoxicated. Dad's home. Dub. I don't know. I think the Falcons are going to have an incredible offense this year. They drafted Bijan Robinson, who has been talked about as a running back prospect that is the best since Saquon Barkley, and in many ways apparently might be better. They have Drake London, who's a really good wide receiver. They have Kyle Pitts, who's basically a wide receiver tight end. Like, and then they have, I forget the quarterback they drafted a year ago. He's kind of unproven. We didn't learn a ton about him last year, but I think their offense is going to be sick, and I think the Bears are going to lose. I don't know that they're going to have the firepower to keep up with that, at least this early on. So I am marking that down as a loss. How does Rob Zachney feel?
I feel good.
Okay. All right. So win for Rob. Elf Patrick. And then finally.
I feel like the Falcons may be a step further away from a big turnaround than the Bears are. And I can see them losing the shootout.
They're doing a wild roster construction, which is just picking, using first-round draft picks year after year on high upside skill players. That's just not usually how it's done. But it does mean that they should have an interesting and fun offense. And we'll just have to see if the Bears can keep up. Week 18 and the season to be determined. Time to be determined. Not where it's played. It's been playing in Lambeau Field. But we end the season where we began, with the Green Bay Packers. Maybe it's worth, at this point, Rob, I'm going to tally up what the record would be at this point. So, one, two.
Patrick, it don't matter to me what the record is at this point.
You're saying dub? You're saying dub? Okay, we end. Okay.
The question is, what playoff seed are we clinching?
All right, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Rob has us winning 11 games. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And I have us winning 11 games. So we are going 11 and six?
Yeah, 17 games now.
According to us, the Bears are going 11 and 6. That might not be enough to win the division. The Lions could be better than that, but we will be firmly in the hunt.
That's where the Bears live, baby.
That graphic on Sunday Night Football, we're going to be there.
Maybe fall off for a week, but then we come right back because somebody else had a bad week.
Oh, my God, 11 and 6. That's going to come back. And no way that can come back and haunt us.
Rob. I feel that's still more measured than we were last year after the 49ers win. I think the 49ers win was like the most, we are so high on this one game.
Did you see that clip of Justin Fields sliding through the rain?
He was sliding like a penguin. Yeah. No, I swear to God, I think we picked them to like lose 3 or 4 games that season.
So that's our predictions on the Chicago Bears. Before we take a break, and at the pace we're going, we are going to have to record this in 2 parts because we didn't even talk about the NBA playoffs. But before we get to that, because Rob and I are going to jump off of this and go stream some the PlayStation kind of E3 press conference thing that's happening. Let's see. What do we have here from you, the listeners, as you're writing into this final? Sports related. Any thoughts on the most recent season of Ted Lasso? Have you watched any of it?
Yeah, I'm a couple episodes behind because MK's been traveling, but I've watched a bunch.
I think it's bad. I think it's really bad. It's extremely watchable. It is a very watchable show that in the moment, okay. And then as I've thought about like many of the storylines that they're playing out this season, they don't make sense to me. I find them frustrating. Every episode is an hour now. When it used to be tight 30.
This is the first time where like, a couple times I've seen the runtime on the episode and I've just been like, we'll watch this later.
Yeah.
I think it opened strong. I think there's some decent ideas but here's the thing. This whole season, they've come up to interesting ideas and then kind of not done anything with them. Like, I thought having Nate turn into a bastard in season 2 was actually kind of a stroke of genius. Like, exploring kind of the dark side of this hero to zero story that we'd sort of been set up for, or zero to hero type story, and to have it turn out to be that, like, once this guy is on top, he turns into, like, a megalomaniacal shithead.
Oh, and that, like, it was the, you know, for all the, you know, the Ted Lassoisms and his wave with people, like, maybe that doesn't that didn't work here. Why didn't it work? Yeah. Like, is it a failure? Or is that, you know, like, and that was an interesting setup.
In this season, an entire season of Nate just being, oh, gee, oh, I'm back to being old Nate. Oh, I'm so shy and little small
bean. If I could just fuck this lady at the restaurant, then
everything would be better. Yeah. Yeah, which is, like, that's the other thing, is we're coming up on, like, oh, so we're just doing, like, straight-up incel fantasy shit now, where, like, the thing that he needed was, like, the love of the girl he was obsessed with, who's, like, totally not a slut, and that, you know, that's kind of the vibe of this, is, like, she was kind of mean to him, but, you know, it's clear she's been waiting for him to get his shit together, and now he's gonna have this, like, sweet, romantic, you know, relationship that's going to turn him into a completely different person.
Right.
And it's,
and he's,
like,
finally going to stand up to that mean guy at the other football team. And, like,
and require rejecting all the, like, the trapping, like, who was presented as the foil was, like, here's some, like, cold, calculating, like, Eastern European models, man. They're so hot, but, like, they're bad women. And don't you want this, like, and so the whole thing gets, like, really weird.
Yes.
So that whole plot sucked. They wasted it. The other thing I felt they were coming up close to is Ted maybe a bad coach? Or has Ted's message gone as far as it can, but he actually can't coach a team with pretensions to competing at a high level in Premier League? Interesting idea. There's an episode where Higgins actually floats, like, do we need to think about making a change at the top? Which would have been a fascinating plot for Ted Lasso to handle, which is, like,
have him
this
fired.
Group of people who are family.
Yeah.
Realize, like, maybe the right thing to do here is part ways. Like, it is defanged the minute it comes up, because
no, instead he is completely inspired by going to a, like, a bullshit American restaurant in Amsterdam
and remembering the Chicago Bulls existed,
right.
And he could create a completely different like scheme for soccer. So that becomes uninteresting. Everything
we don't know what to do with Keely. Like, we really like this character, but you know,
what
I mean, like,
what if there was just a second workplace comedy happening within our workplace comedy?
Yes. And it's like it feels as though, oh, at some point, we had a plot thread we wanted to pull on where, like, how would the men in her life deal with, like, the leaking of, you know, explicit photos, that she had made for them or for herself or whatever. I could see that being part of the workplace drama element of Ted Lasso, but you took her out of there and she's not romantically involved with either of these men anymore, and, like, the show, despite being an hour long, is still not dedicating enough time.
Hey, guess what? I actually don't give a shit if she and Roy ever get back together.
No.
I don't care anymore, because, you know what? Like, the other thing is, you can actually go all out on a relationship, and that is where I'm at with Roy and Keely. Don't care. The breakup was stupid and contrived.
So now just own it and just move on.
Right. Like, there's nothing now to make me think that these people should continue to be together. But how do we get around that? Oh, once again, we'll introduce a woman who, like, seems cool, but what if she isn't? And that also felt like, I think there's something for the fact that the Jack character, once again, is someone who's, like, wealth and privilege makes them seem very nice. But it turns out that there's, like, a rottenness behind that facade. That's kind of a cool idea to explore. But it also kind of is, once again, a romantic threat in the form of a woman who's going to be revealed to be a monster here.
And it just feels like a spinoff. It is not a connective thread to, like, the heart of the show. It just feels like the show incapable of giving up, like, writing off characters or just properly spinning them off. Like, fine, you want to do Keely has a workplace comedy of her own. Like, it's a universe that can probably support one of those as an experiment, or let it be a one-off episode, right? Like, okay, well, like, Keely's back and we're going to explore. Like, it just feels is incapable of, like, it used to be a very tightly wound thing. And whether you liked it or not, it knew what it was, and it was really tight and, like, stayed true to that. And now it just feels like it is just, like, And there, I also like don't believe it's the like end of the show. Like there's no. there's it does not feel like there's any sort of finality coming. Like,
there might be a Ted Lasso verse coming where it's right. Ted Lasso has ended and here's three different shows.
Right.
Like but the other thing is I will say this too, the Colin story is an example of you have gone so far out of your way to make sure that we all know that everyone in the show is like the most open-minded and liberal and sweet person ever. Like they've sanded away all like the icky parts of what you might find in a locker room. It is just the cutest, sweetest bunch of like positive sports bros. But that does also mean that the entire like can Colin come out to his teammates thing really has like zero suspense to it, even though we're going to linger over it, because while the experience coming out may be fraught for us as the viewers, there is just zero, we have zero question as to how this is going to play out. They started to do this head fake of like, what if Isaac is secretly a homophobe? Nope. Like we've had three seasons to know who this guy is. Like even if you do reveal that he's a bit homophobic in some ways, Ted Lasso is a show where that would be brushed out of the way fast. It's just, it would just be like, hey man, I didn't realize that, like, you know, I was talking about,
turns and out I do like gay people because I like you, and like the veil is dropped and like suddenly he's no longer, you know, homo, or he's asking questions and he's like, oh, now I understand. I mean, the best part of that arc was everything prior to that was just like him with what's the journalist that's like embedded with the team now?
Trent Crim.
Yeah, I thought, like, despite the fact that it's an overstuffed show with too many characters that it can't find the time to dedicate to them despite its like long running time, like that little, those interactions with them, like I would have been fine if that's all, like let him come out and like have that with Trent, but all the stuff with the team, I'm with you, like there was just zero tension to sap from that, because this is just not what this kind of show is. And like the one character who could have been that was like, Rob, I've forgotten that, was his Zappa, whatever that dude's name
Zappa,
was, like,
yeah,
just that gone. Came and went. Might as well not have been in the show. I like that is at least the kind of wild card that you could have introduced, that maybe like what does the team do when their most talented player like actually can't accept like Colin coming out? Okay, maybe that would have been,
but instead he just disappeared. Like the entire bye-bye. Yeah, the entire side plot was a waste. So it has been, yes, it is watchable. There are fun moments, but yeah, I don't care that much. All these plot lines are kind of fizzling, and
it's turned into a show that it's not quite watch out of obligation, but it used to be when there was a new episode out, I wanted to watch it, and then I wanted to see what like people were saying about it and read about it. Now, I'm like you, like two different times we have clicked on the episode, and my wife goes like, how long is it? I was like, an hour and 2 minutes. She's like, well, we're not watching that tonight. And then it gets pushed down the queue, and we get to it eventually, but it has not been like, you know, we're like much more inclined. Like, I want to watch that Silo show, which I've heard really good things about. Yeah. So that's where I think we're on the same page with Ted Lasso. It's like I'm kind of hoping this is it, because I'd like to just be done with it. You know, it's like I'll watch this season, I'm invested, but it is hard for me to think that I'm going to be like really excited to watch a whole other season of this. You know, and it's hard to imagine them giving it up. I actually recommend people go check out that the other show that Bill Lawrence, the creator, co-creator of this and Scrubs and some other stuff, Shrinking, which is also on Apple TV. It's got Harrison Ford. It's like shockingly good. And Harrison Ford acts for the first time like in decades in a way that is like, yeah, whatever. Like he was fine in Force Awakens and the other stuff, but I never feel like he's acting. You know what I mean? Like he's just sort of playing the character.
Yeah, he's been in mailing it in mode for a while.
Yes, which is fine. The man is old. Like, do what you want. But if you want to see him actually act, he's remarkably good in that show. So, all right. Well, we're going to take a break so that we can go do this Sony stuff. And then we'll come back and record a part two where we answer some more questions and talk about the NBA playoffs. We'll be back in a minute.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we're back. Our Ted Lasso thoughts out. Watch that PlayStation showcase. We're moving through time in weird ways with this recording. So before we, get out of here for the second half of the show, we'll answer a couple more questions as well. But also, Rob, the NBA playoffs, the NBA finals are almost here. We thought we might get what I guess some people are calling sweep miss, which was the Lakers getting swept by the Nuggets and then the Celtics getting swept by the Heat. But the Celtics, I didn't watch a lot of that second half because we were recording something else that people will hear at a later date. But like it seemed like the Heat and Celtics were kind of nipping at each other's heels, and then the Celtics managed to pull away and probably are not going to pull out winning the series, but are at least going to stop themselves from being like a completely embarrassed.
Yeah, I mean, it's better to, you know, it's if they end up going out in respectable fashion in the next game or something, I think it may not be quite as devastating a verdict on the team as like game three implied.
Yeah, I wonder if like all the best they can hope for is like that coach is almost certainly getting fired. Did you see the bit about the town?
Oh, yeah, about like how he to understand Boston and to like build team culture, right? He watched The Town a bunch.
Not just watches it like 4 times a week.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah. You might say that on one hand, trying to understand Boston through the lens of The Town. Okay, a little odd, but yeah, sure.
That's funny right out of the gate, to be quite honest. That is already hysterically funny.
Yes, it is. The Celtics have been kind of a strange team post losing in the finals last year to the Warriors.
I don't know. I think you need to say that they were a strange team in that finals, right? Like, yeah. The experience was always like, on their day, they are unequivocally like the best team in basketball. At least last year they were. Mm-hmm. But they don't show up. And I'll say this about like Missoula. Like, I have seen people sort of saying like this points out that, you know, this whole thing doesn't work without Ime Udoka, who was like put on a leave of absence and then sort of just terminated under kind of weird circumstances involving like personal conduct.
It was never really disclosed, which frankly, not that I'm trying to give, you know, props to the Boston sports organizations, but like there are like much messier ways for organizations to justify why they were getting, and it did seem like a lot of details on whatever happened were kept out of the public eye, and the decision was, and like I respected that.
Right, but there were folks who were like, because there was a lack of information, you know, was Udoka kind of done dirty in all this? Mm-hmm. And I think you have to assume that, like, for them to get rid of a coach that had been that successful, that it was something like they really felt their hand is being forced. But either way, there were folks like coming out of out of game three, especially, who were saying this kind of proved that this team doesn't work without Udoka, that, you know, Missoula's got to go. They never should have fired Ime. This is the same team. Like, the notion that, oh, that game three never would have happened under Ime. Bullshit. Like, this is who they were. They lost a finals because of this.
Yeah.
Like, it, you know, you can say that, like, Missoula clearly is not, like, rising to the moment. And certainly the optics of, like, every time he tries to get the team to rally, it's Al Horford being the one who's, like, doing the whole
guys. Marcus Smart is like, hey, time out. Time to talk about the next play. Coach is taking a backseat while one of the senior players is explaining what we're doing.
Not a great look. But at the same time, like, I think you do have to look at this is a team that really did just fumble it away versus the Warriors last year. And now they're that but worse. The swings are worse. And the moments where they, you know, show what their ceiling is are fewer and farther between. So, like, I don't know. It feels pretty apocalyptic for the Celtics right now. Now, you know, if they manage to staunch the bleeding and they end up coming out of this with, like, they go out 4-2 in the series. That's a godsend. Maybe it postpones some of the hard conversations that are coming, but coming out of game three, there was kind of a sense of like, what here works?
Well, and also, like, you know, you talk about players quitting. It felt like that was a team that had quit, like didn't feel like it had the cohesion, the strategy, the players, whatever, like take your pick. And yet, like, there's losing by 10 points and then there's losing by 30 points or like whatever the gap, like it became a blowout. And that's not what you expect from like this level of the series, like, you know, especially from a team like, right. Like, I think like the Heat were an eighth seed. Like that, this is not how this is supposed to go. Now, granted, the Heat are defying all expectations of what teams at certain seedings,
just like the Bulls could have done.
Hey, it does allow us to, look, right until that, into that fourth quarter with 5 minutes to go, looked like the Bulls had their number. But, you know, you look at the Lakers-Nuggets game, and, like, yes, the Nuggets were firmly in control, and they did sweep the Lakers. But if you actually watch those games were competitive, and they were close, and never really felt like they were going to go the other way. But they were not blowouts. Those were extreme. That was, like, as sweeps are not usually fun to watch. They're usually particularly non-competitive games in which you're just trying to get to the next round as an audience member, so you can just watch like some decent competitive play. And those Lakers Nuggets games were fun as hell. Like, those were extremely enjoyable games to watch, even if at the same time you're watching LeBron James like finally confront like time itself and just be unable to be the superhuman that we have expected from him for literal decades at this point. But it was still like a ton of fun.
Yeah, those were, you know, a thing that people, I think, were coming to appreciate more at the end of that series was the Lakers looked like they were staring a lost season, you know, in the eye, and they turned into a pretty good team, if not a great one, but they ran into a great one. And that was really, that's what sealed their fate, right? Like, they could hang tough in the series, but they didn't have the horses to win those games. And the Nuggets just kind of look inevitable, both in the sense of, like, for a while it's looked like this is the team that is going to cruise to the finals, but also in the sense of, you know, you watch a lot of playoff basketball in general, it does tend to be a game with lots of, like, streaks and runs and such. Nuggets basketball doesn't feel that way. It feels like they just, like, perfectly pace through the game to continue just like running up like a sizable score on you, and you go on a run, you can like break away from the little bit, but they don't get rattled, they keep coming. And that seems like it's going to be a very, very hard thing for anyone to beat, because there's just not many teams that can both like produce enough points to beat the Nuggets, but also do anything to stop them from scoring on you. Because, like, ultimately, Jokic can stand in the paint and just, like, I mean, there are times his game looks like in middle school, like one of the kids who just, like, sprouts early and is a little stronger than everyone else is just down, like, is just like standing over these kids, like playing keep away and just like lobbing the ball over their heads.
There were a number of threes that, I mean, like, this series is the closest I've watched the Nuggets play, probably, you know, in the last like couple of years when they've kind of crystallized in being pretty good. And like, there were like multiple shots that like Jokic would do. It's like a caveman hurdling a giant rock. Like, he's throwing threes that by any conventional measure, if you did not know the player, did not know their track record, did not know that they are, don't really fit the sort of aesthetic profile that we normally associate with players of that caliber, it looks like he's just throwing the ball away. Like, well, okay, I'm tossing it up, but like, clearly it's not going to go in, because it's almost like he's heaving it behind his head and then just whipping it. And then he sunk multiple threes that way, and every time. And this is something that I like find myself actually kind of rattled by, is like, he's not fun to watch play. Like, and what I mean by that is, he does not fit the traditional aesthetic measures of, like, when I talk about like cool looking basketball, like, frankly, I look at Jimmy Butler, right? Like, is on the other side of that. Like, a guy who can hit the threes, like, gets in for layups, and, like, looks cool as shit doing it. Like, there's nothing cool about, his game. It is just, like, a rock fight, but, like, he's really talented at throwing this rock. And I don't know, it's a weird feeling to be like, even a sequence where he does something amazing. Like, when I watch the highlight, it's like, that doesn't look amazing. Now, he did it, and I know it's amazing, but it's just, like, not cool to look at.
I don't know. I get what you're saying. There is an element of he's not posterizing people. But there are times as well where it's like you watch enough basketball, you know how hard it is to thrive in the paint like he does, mm-hmm. right? Like, it is hard to just, like, command that space and stand there and, like, get that look and make that shot. But he does. Like, the sheer number of times, it's like there's all the mess around him, and then he just sticks that arm up and out of it and just sort of, like, lobs it in, and it goes. And, like, the other thing is those shots, like, those little short-range contested shots mm-hmm. are so much harder to make than they look. Like, you see every night guys trying to get those on rebounds or, you know, like, battling for the ball and just trying to put it up there and get, like, good players. And, like, usually those shots don't go in despite the range, despite, like, they're just tough to make. And I think for me, that is the thing that actually feels the most like he's ripping the soul out of people's bodies, is that, you know what, like, lots of teams now have guys who hit those, like, wild pull up threes and such. But it is the I am just going to stand here. And that's two. That's another two. Again and again, mm-hmm. That is the stuff that, like, you're not supposed to be, like, giving away points like that, and the Nuggets are just taking them.
Well, that's what makes the matchup the most likely matchup for the finals. I mean, obviously, I guess there's a chance that the Heat completely blow it, but I think we are heading towards a Nuggets Heat finals, and, like, that is probably not what, you know, the league wants from a ratings perspective. You know what I mean? Like, having the Lakers in there is better for the quote, better for the league. Having the Celtics in there is quote, better for the league. It's going to get more average people to show up. But, like, the Nuggets, this team who feels inedible, has this player that doesn't make any sense. Like, how we, like, normally think of, like, how basketball players are supposed to look and function. And then the Heat, a team who statistically don't make any sense, like, should not be this good, looked awful in the regular season, or at least, like, middling and average. I mean, if I think it points to, like, in broad strokes, the talent level of the NBA just being baseline higher than, so, like, quote unquote, bad teams are just better than they've ever been, but they should not be this dominant. Like, the Celtics, for all of their flaws and the fact that sometimes they just don't show up, are, like, for those three games, we're not just getting beat, but they're ass kicked, humiliated. Like, Butler is out there actively making fun of them like he is a schoolyard bully. And if I was a Celtics fan, like, I cannot imagine how, like, the fury of a thousand suns would be burning within you when he is doing, like, those bits, like the timeout stuff to Horford. Like, it's unbelievable. And, like, those two clashes of play style sound incredibly fun for the finals. I think the Nuggets probably pull it out. I just think they've got too much going on. Momentum is on their side. But if you were to pick one team where, like, well, who would have a chance? Like, it's Jimmy Buckets. Like, if any player has a chance, it's him.
Well, and, like, I feel like both in the Phoenix series and the Lakers series, even more the Lakers series, but in both of those, you saw teams just could not hang with the Nuggets the entire run, right? They would just sort of, like, they were gassed at the end. They couldn't manage another run by, you know, in the last, like, 5 minutes of the fourth. And mm-hmm. like, the Nuggets were just like, pull out that little lead, and then you look up and it's a big lead. Mm-hmm. The Heat are built different on that front. Like, they are also kind of a relentless team, and I'm really curious. I'm curious what that matchup looks like. And the other thing is, you know, the thing that was really supposed to be the kiss of death for the Heat was that, like, Tyler Herro was supposed to be one of their major weapons, and he was hurt this entire playoffs, and so, like, they just weren't going to have the offensive firepower to do any of this. It hasn't mattered. Like, you know, this discussion of, like, their undrafted players, they're, like, you know, the backups, you know, the backups to the backups in some ways.
There was a stat on one of the games, one of the one for the first three where the Celtics were shooting particularly poorly. And like the stat at the bottom of the screen was like Celtics players total points, and it was something pitiful. And it was like Heat like undrafted players total points, and it was something like Celtics six like undrafted players like 28 or something. Like they were it was a really bad run, but like it's almost hard to even look at the Heat as like, is this good roster construction or is this just special and magical and exceptional, and we should appreciate the synthesis that is happening here, but that other teams cannot replicate what is occurring.
You know, I don't know basketball that well. I enjoy watching it. I just don't know it that well. The one thing I will say is like one, it does feel special. It does feel like something like really unusual is happening here, but also it does seem like, Jimmy Butler and to a slightly lesser extent, Bam Adebayo are forcing the defense to contract and follow them more closely. And like, you know, the thing about NBA players in general is that, you know, you can set like all of them tend to be really good shooters if they are not being contested very effectively. You know, that's the weird thing. You think of guys as like, oh, you know, this guy can't hit shit. And it's like, no, he can't hit shit against the typical NBA defense, but like, you know, in a shoot around versus, you know, someone at the gym, they would massacre them because actually with none of the defense in their face, none of the contesting of the shot, they're really, really accurate. They're really good at sinking these. It's just the difficulty of the game that makes these field goal percentages what they are. And some of the stuff I see when the Heat are really going off is the defense is being pulled apart so completely that some of the looks that the other three players on the Heat are getting are incredibly wide open. And I think that is part of it is I do think there is an element of the teams playing the Heat are consistently find themselves in these damned if you do situations where you can either follow Jimmy around, in which case lots of other shots are open for other people, and God help you, the other people are making them. Or you can run a conventional defense and Jimmy's just going to shred you.
Just a chaotic team. And because they're also like they have that kind of, I don't know, they just suck the energy out of teams, right? Like they are just, it just seems like they did it to the Knicks. They're doing it to the Celtics, where it's like the best you're going to get Celtics is you got this one game. Like I still feel like if I was betting money, I would just be betting on the Heat to just.
And even that one game, yes, the Celtics did snap in, but I actually felt like the Heat were going to lose it from the first half because like the Heat were not taking them seriously. You could feel that. Mm-hmm. Is the Heat were, they were just pulling up and shelling the net, and they still damn near like,
yeah,
built out a lead. But if you compare how they were playing in the other games to how they played game four, the Heat were having fun and they were toying with their food a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think given the way that the Celtics played in the previous game, you can't really blame them for being like, well, do we really need to put in all of our energy into this one?
No,
like,
it's a hard physical game. Showing up that hard every night is really tough. Yeah. And so I do feel like they were kind of checking, can we put this away going at half speed?
Yeah, the longer it takes, I mean, like one of the advantages of the Nuggets, even though they're not a particularly injured team, is, you know, the finals don't start until next Saturday or Thursday or something like that. Like, it's a long time to rest and get right before the finals actually begin. And so the Heat are a little more banged up than the Nuggets. And so they're going to want to hopefully put this away.
It's been a great playoffs, though, overall. Yes. I think it's been, and I feel bottom. Like it's left the NBA in such an interesting place where it is like the Warriors had their like false dawns, the wrong word, but like they kind of stole one last year. You know, their mm-hmm. era, you know, got a bit of a grace period. It's just tough for them to pull it together for a playoff run at this point. Sixers look completely lost. I was talking to our moderator Mo the other night. I was like, you know, in a weird way, because this is a thing that happens in the NBA, I think, more than even in the NFL in some ways, just because of how like things are constructed. One of the things that I think helps teams that win a lot is that in their desperation to defeat whoever the leading teams are, other franchises begin making desperation moves to try to, like, how do we break the ceiling? How do we fix it? Like, I think you'd argue that LeBron James devastated the Eastern Conference, like, for his entire career. It was just, like, one team after another. Bulls had their moment of, like, this is a championship-caliber team. Nope. Hard ceiling, and that ceiling is LeBron James. And then
that
those
Derrick
teams
Rose's
start...
knees.
Yeah, no, 100%. But, like, this is... You see teams, though, being, like, reaching the conclusion where it's like, oh, it's time to blow it up. Time to... Oh, we got to change the coach. The team's not responding to the coach anymore. And you see teams, I think, enter maybe death spirals because they're trying to figure out, like, how do we break this barrier? And I think that's happening a lot in the Eastern Conference right now. A lot of teams are having
Rob,
that,
the
like,
lesson may be for these Chicago Bulls, like, very easy for this, if they want to convince themselves of a lie, would be to say they actually crushed the Nuggets in the regular season, and they got beat by the Heat, who went to the finals. Shouldn't you just run a team like that back? No.
And shouldn't you just put Stacey King on a national broadcast?
I mean, you should do that. Put Stacey King on that TNT stage.
Dude, this thing, I'm sitting there, I'm like, genuinely, yes, I'm, again,
we get one more
homer.
Night of Chuck, though. That's, they were, like, doing the whole lament, like, is this our final night? Are we done for the season? Because they don't do anything for the finals. That's all on ABC. So, like, at least we get one more night of Shaq and Chuck.
But I'm like, I have been struck, the one thing, the playoffs have been great. I miss the weirdness of the Stacey King broadcast and his weird mix of, like, odd little bits and also actually thoughtful, engaged insight, as opposed to what we tend to get for a lot of the playoffs.
I think that's right. Well, let's answer a couple of questions. We got some good ones that people wrote in with.
Hey, did you see this message from Austin?
No.
We have breaking news. We have breaking sports
Commander's
news.
Trademark application is denied. Good God, that's incredible. I mean, the thing they should do is rename it again and get the full stink of Snyder out of there. So maybe this is someone's sending the trademark office some cash to be like, can you just please deny this so we have a plausible reason to name it? I didn't like the Commander's name either.
Dump the color scheme, like, genuinely, yeah. Just blow it all away. Yeah. The color scheme's tainted too. It's just, all gotta go.
Just start over. Hi, sports. Perhaps in theme with this being the last sports pod ever, my question is about fandom and legacy. There's been a narrative that, quote, kids these days follow players instead of teams, especially in American sports. I'm not sure that's necessarily true, as most of this is claimed anecdotally, but I've always found the idea of fandom fascinating. If this were true, is American sports fandom going to slowly erode over time, especially as players switch teams more and more now? I've always wondered if I ever have kids, if I'll try to plant my Chicago sports fandom in them at an early age. I used to be pretty adamant that I would do so, but as I get older, I'm not so sure anymore. I know that Patrick said he's always wanted his daughters to discover video games organically if it were to happen, but do you feel the same way about your sports fandom? To me, there is some sense of familial inheritance that I enjoy with fandom. My parents immigrated here in the 90s and have told me that little toddler me used to watch the 90s Bulls on TV back then. My Bears fandom can be traced back to that 2006 Super Bowl run and watching games with my dad every Sunday as he learned the game along with me. It's funny how it all started with such success, but ever since Chicago sports has mostly become a dumpster fire. In a way, we are all cursed with sports fandom in one way or the other, and that's part of the experience. But maybe it doesn't have to be this way, and none of this is all that serious. Anyway, pardon my philosophical rambling. I'm going to miss the pod. I'm going to miss being infuriated with Rob's 2023 Bulls optimism. You and me both. Jerry Reinsdorf, please sell the team. I think that is an interesting question of the, that is, like, broadly kind of called the player empowerment era of, like, players in, this, we largely talk about this with baseball or with basketball, but it's coming a little bit to football. And it's obviously very common in, like, European football, where, like, there's just more player movement brought. Like, I'd be curious, like, in, like, I think it is an open question on whether players, whether kids start, get attached regionally to sports in the same way that they did as their parents. But I guess we'd have to wait longer to see the data kind of bear that out. But I do think, I don't know, like lots of kids were fans of Michael Jordan, didn't like the Bulls, and probably still were fans of their local sports team. But I don't know what's happening to sports writ large and if whether there's like impact there.
I think there's so many layers to this. I remember the thesis that people are going to get into the stars and not the teams, I think has kind of fallen apart, because it turns out there were a few stars that exerted that kind of pull on people. LeBron was one of them. The Warriors have been another great story, but I feel like viewership trends and such kind of indicated that people were not really just following the stars, that it was, or that there were not enough interesting new stars like coming up to create a new paradigm for fandom. So I'm not sure if that is the future. And there's the broader demographic crisis facing sports, which is all their viewerships are aging. And I think a big part of that is probably due to the fact that you tend to lose a lot of young people. My one theory I've always had is like sports wedded themselves completely to cable TV. And I think like a lot of hand wringing is like, why aren't sports speaking to young people? What, like, how are we losing these generations? It's because your TV deals. Like you tied everything to cable TV and the advertising money. Like,
it's not just that. It's also the way it's sliced up and distributed, right? If you are a fan of a sport, it's one thing if you're just like, I want to watch my team, my regional team's games. Like, that is still can be complicated, but is at least
broadly. Oh, it is here. Right. YouTube TV doesn't have Nesson.
Right. So it can be complicated, but like, if you're like, I just would like to understand the league. And it's like, well, it's not even as simple as buying like a league sports pass. Like, that doesn't like, oh, you know, like the NFL, for example. Now, the NFL is big enough, it could do whatever the fuck it wants. But they sold one wild card game to Peacock next season for $100 million. It will be aired locally on TV in those regions where those teams are. But everyone else has to pay to sign up for Peacock, or hopefully you've never signed up and get the free trial, to watch one game. And it's like, that shit like reeks of just short-term squeezing at the expense of long-term fan investment, and is going to get them to turn to other things that are just easier to access.
Well, it's same deal with, going to the games is wildly expensive. So, you know, I guess like upper middle class kids will have warm memories of going to take in a ball game with mom and dad or something. But like, I don't know, man, I've barely been to a live sports event in years, because until fairly recently, that shit was completely out of, like, there was just never a time when it made any sense. Like, yeah, I'll go take in a game. Look up Bruins tickets, just random. Boston sports, very easy for me to get to. The prices are really discouraging. So I think there's a lot of it. I think the bottom line is the everyone's going to get into the players thing isn't really bearing out in terms of like what we do about like passing on fandom. I've thought about this a lot. This is kind of probably my most right wing belief. This sort of come to over the years, which is that on balance, I don't like fucking losers. And that is not a, and the thing is, that's not like a socioeconomic judgment. It is like, there are some people who have loser written all fucking over them. Democratic politicians, the Chicago Bears. And like, I feel like, honestly, my relationship to the Bears turned me into the sort of person who tolerated and embraced a lot of mediocrity in a way that like has not been beneficial for me as a human. Like, sometimes it is healthy to look at something and be like, this ain't it. And it doesn't matter if your dad and your dad's dad all grew up like cheering like Go Bears. If you look around, you're like, these people are fucking losers. They can't get their shit together. They can't do the least thing right. You don't need to be associated with that.
But here's the thing. I'm with you. I do not think regional sports are your birthright, but part of fandom is picking a path and then sticking with it.
Yes.
Once it is no longer rational. And so, look, if you... I had friends that did this where when the Bears were really sucking... This is like, I don't know, like 8 or 9 years ago. They're like, I don't want to watch the Bears anymore. We're picking a new team. And they picked the Panthers because they like Cam Newton. And it's like, okay, like I can sort of respect it. It's like a good team, but not a... Like, you know, I mean, there's no guarantees. Like, Cam Newton is fun to watch. I want to watch that every Sunday and make that my team. I was like, okay. I don't know if they stuck with that. But I think if you're going to make that choice, when you say fandom, what you mean is you're getting on the crazy train. Like, the times are not going to be good forever. And so if what you're asking is, like, can I – as soon as my team becomes dysfunctional, can I just pick a new one? Well, that's not fandom. Fandom has to ride out or just deal with
the fact. Up to a point. I think so. The thing is, I think, like, hey, winners hit hard times too. You know what I mean? It's like you can hit, like.
So then what are the Bulls? How long do I have to be a fan until the 90s have run out of gas? The Bears, it's 85, right? That's run out of gas. Like, that's done. Stop talking about 1985. Nobody gives a shit.
The thing is, like, I feel especially, like, when you listen to a lot of the Chicago sports media that you and I do, right, there's always this sense of, like, does the ownership get it and care, or are they stringing everyone along? Because historically, the rap on the McCaskies is they're very happy to string people along. Like, the team just has to be good enough to keep the gravy train running, but really, like, you're all being played for suckers. And there are times when I look at the Bears and I'm like, this is not a serious operation. Like, a serious operation wouldn't have allowed things to get this far. I'm too far in. But if I think about, like, a hypothetical, like, child of mine, am I saying the Bears are your inheritance? I don't know that I am. But I think more importantly is it is useful to look at a situation. It's like, these are not just hard times. This is bad faith. And I think that's kind of the difference, right? Like, the thing I like about the Bulls is, and this is why I like that they were playing hard. They were playing hard when, like, maybe arguably the thing to do was just, like, throw in the towel. But, like, they had that dog in them. And they were gonna make a go of it with this, like, really compromised, awkwardly constructed roster. And that was fun to watch. That gave me 2 months of, like, really fun basketball to watch. And I would take that over many full seasons I've had with the Bears just, like, running the clock on one more misbegotten era. And so I think that is kind of it for me, is, like, I think you are signing up for the good times and the bad, but I think there is a moment where you have to realize, like, this is a good thing. This fandom is kind of being twisted and, like, instrumentalized by people who fundamentally are playing a different game than the sport I'm watching.
I think that is right. I can endorse that. Unfortunately, I think that is going to bring us to the end of the podcast. We're getting tight for time here. I have to take a child to an art class, and we're getting tight for time on Waypoint. But thanks to everyone who has listened to sports. It was, you know, the whole lark here was, you know, Rob and I were talking about sports in a DM with Austin. It's like, should we just start recording these thoughts into a microphone and see how far we can push the Waypoint audience into listening to us talk about the most inane bullshit, especially if we wrap it around largely Chicago sports. And the way people responded to it has been awesome and really fun. And I, you know, it is unfortunate that here at the end, I thought we'd kind of found our way towards how do we do other stuff and talk about other sports that aren't necessarily those specific regional topics. And so, you know, I mean, never say never. I think, you know, when it was invoked that wouldn't it be nice to talk about Tour de France, you know, maybe we'll find a way to talk about Tour de France. Maybe you can't completely keep us down.
I'm going to have to talk to, like, I have to find some venue to talk to Patrick about what happened with Arsenal this year. And, like, watching all of English soccer had its soul ripped away by Man City.
Yes. So, I think that poll is still going to be there. And people just have to stay tuned as we try and figure out where does that poll take us. But if this is the end, it has been an incredibly fun ride. I've really delighted and enjoyed being able to tell people that. What do you do for a living? And then in a slightly embarrassed tone, be like, I don't know. Sometimes people pay me to talk about the Chicago Bears. Are you a sports analyst? I am not. I am not.
I'm a connoisseur of many games.
Exactly. Yeah. Sports is a game, is it not? To refute to that one. I've got an outro. It doesn't really matter. You can follow Waypoint if you want at Waypoint on Twitter, on Twitch at twitch.tv/Waypoint, and at youtube.com/Waypoint Vice. Lots of archives are still up there. There's things to check out. And our writing at waypoint.vice.com. There'll be a couple of things going up before this is all said and done. This episode is premiering ad-free on Waypoint Plus. Thanks to everyone who subscribed to that over the years to get early episodes, exclusive episodes, ad-free episodes. You can follow me at Patrick Klepek. Rob, where can the people follow you?
At Rob Zachney on Twitter until someone hooks me up with a Blue Sky invite.
It's true. I gotta get out. I keep tweeting or... What are we calling it in Blue Sky? I don't know.
Oh, shit. What was
it? Wasn't there a word?
Yeah, it was different. It was different. It was like, it wasn't...
I'm posting there because I've heard that invites are tied to activity, and I still haven't gotten one so I can get Rob in. But I'll keep posting, and hopefully I'll get that invite so I can give Rob the hookup. But until next time, wherever it may
Skeets.
Be... Skeets?
You're skeeting...
I don't like that.
I don't like that.
I'm gonna run away from that as fast as possible and say, until next time, wherever form it takes, fuck capitalism and bear down.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.